I'm Harlan G., recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. Very, very glad to be here. This is a very important topic. This is a topic that OA suffers from every day of my life. I see this just absolute chaos with sponsorship. Sponsors that are scared to death of their sponsee, worried more about whether they're liked or not liked, or just afraid to confront people, afraid to, and you don't have to, I don't mean confront in a very nasty way, but just afraid to be the adult in the room. The sponsor has to be the adult in the room. But let's go into some history here. And we have on page 14, Bill Wilson is in the town's hospital, and he is having a spiritual experience. What is the difference between a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening? Well, a spiritual awakening is slow in developing, and a spiritual experience is very fast. And he gets up out of the ether and he says on page 14, after having had his spiritual experience, which is very fast, he says, "While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given me. Perhaps I could help some of them. They in turn might work with others." One of the things that I hear all the time in program is, how do I keep my program fresh? How do I keep it green? And there are three things that a person can do to keep their program green. Number one, sponsor others. Number two, sponsor others. And number three, sponsor others. You don't have to worry about going through the 12 steps all the time, over and over again. You just have to live in 10, 11, and 12, and you're going to pretty much cover your bases. Now let's go to the next paragraph and let's see Ebby's legacy. Ebby wasn't good at doing this, but he was good at telling us what we need to do. He says, "My friend," and when he says my friend, he's talking about Ebby. He says, "My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs." What are the principles? The principles are the steps. This thing of the principle of this is hope, and the principle of that is truth. And that came out in the 80s. That came out way after Bill and Bob were dead. They were at the big meeting in the sky when that stuff came out. When he's talking about the principles, he's talking about the steps. And he says, "In all my affairs, particularly what imperative." What does imperative mean? Imperative means that it is important above all else to work with others as he had worked with me. "Faith without works was dead," he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. If he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. What is Ebby telling us here? He's telling you and me that no matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. And as a human being, I'm going to have tests. I'm going to have ups. I'm going to have downs. This has been a heck of a year for me. I suffered the loss of a relationship that I didn't want to lose. I've had two very close friends die, and one friend who had a heart attack and he coded on the table. He's alive now, but he coded on the table. He's got five stents in his heart and he's diabetic and he's a dear friend and I'm scared. I lost two very close people in my life this year. I lost a friend who I talk to every day that I've known for 60 years. And we were in each other's lives all the time. The person that brought me to my very first OA meeting ever on February 2nd, 1979, a woman who was more like a mother to me than I have time and vocabulary to tell you, died at 93 years old. I lost her, and it's a loss that I cannot explain to you in words. But yet, I have not put food in my mouth. And the only reason that I have not put food in my mouth is because I sponsor. And my sponsees are my professors. My sponsees are my guides, my teachers, and I thank God for them every day. My sponsorship questions that I get all the time are, I'm scared to sponsor. What do I do? Can I serve in other ways? Well, there's a woman that lives in New Jersey, and she says, if you're scared to sponsor, you better be scared not to sponsor. You better be scared not to, because without sponsorship, I'm not fulfilling the 12-step program. I'm working an 11-step program. And an 11-step program, to the best of my knowledge, does not work. I have to get in there, and I have to remember what Clancy Imeslin teaches me. Clancy Imeslin teaches me that I do not learn this program by absorbing spiritual information. This is not a class. I'm not going to stand at the head of the classroom and teach you about Ebby and Hank Parkhurst and Fitzmaio and Jimmy Burwell and all the rest of them. I learn this program by transmitting spiritual information. There's a difference. One of the greatest joys of my life, and there are many of you here tonight, and I've seen you coming in. Not all of you. I know some of you better than I know others. I've seen you coming in new. I've seen you coming in not so new. I've seen you struggle. I've seen your ups. I've seen your downs. And now when I see you sponsoring, it brings joy to my heart because it infuses me with a spirit. It infuses me with faith in God that says recovery is alive and well. But it won't be alive and well long unless we continue to carry the mantle of the transmission of this life-giving message. If you don't exactly know how to sponsor, don't be afraid to ask questions. And remember that the big book can do the heavy lifting for me. The doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution, and more about alcoholism is all step one. Step two is chapter four, We Agnostics. Chapter five, How It Works, is steps three and four. Chapter six are steps 5 through 11. Chapters 7, 8, 9, and 10 are step 12. Very, very important. People ask me, what are you talking about? It only says working with others. Yeah, but what are, when it says practice these principles in all of our affairs, what are those affairs? To the wife, the family afterwards, and to the employer. Those are practicing your principles in all these affairs, in all our affairs. It's very, very important that we do this. We are all carrying a message. We are all carrying a message. Now, some of us, sadly, are carrying a message that this doesn't work. We are carrying a message that says we are cautionary tales and this does not work. And some of us are carrying a message that says, follow me. I will walk the path a little ahead of you. Look at my light. Follow where I'm walking. And you can have what has been so freely given me. I've been in these rooms for 46 years. I've got 26 years of abstinence. You do the math. When I was in tremendous relapse, I was living in Eugene, Oregon at the time. It was an August morning on a Sunday, and my then 18 or 19-month-old daughter was in the kitchen playing with the dogs while her mother, my wife, unloaded a bunch of groceries and was putting things in bags and putting things in cupboards. And it was a Sunday morning in our home. My 19-month-old daughter opened up the refrigerator door. Now, remember, I'm in relapse now. She opened up the refrigerator door and said, "Shit, Esther, there's nothing in here. If looks could kill, I would have been vaporized." Where did she get "shit, Esther, there's nothing in here"? I wonder where she got it. She got it by watching Daddy open the refrigerator door 40,000 million gazillion trillion Google times and saying, "Shit, Esther, there's nothing in here." A number of years later, we were living in Scottsdale, and there was a program called My Name is Earl about a guy and his brother who used to rob houses, and they won the lottery, and they were going back and making amends to the people that they had robbed. And she looked at the TV, and she looked at me, and looked at the TV, and looked at me, and said, "Those guys are just doing their ninth step, right, Dad?" Without a word from me, without any coaching from me, without me teaching her what a ninth step is, this is the message that I was carrying to this little girl. We are all responsible to carry a message. And we have to carry that message because it is not only life-giving to the newcomer, but it is life-giving to us as well. Any idiot can count the seeds in an apple, but only God can count the apples in a seed. A number of years ago, a friend of mine named Scott, he's dead now, unfortunately, he was in Los Angeles as part of an AA group. He was in AA, NA, and OA. And he was going on a 12-step call with another gentleman to a motel in East Los Angeles, California, which is not the high rent district. They got to this motel and they saw a man who had called into the office, and he was quite drunk, sitting on the bed, barely coherent. They spoke with this man for about an hour, and he was falling asleep. So they laid him back on the bed, took off his shoes, covered him up, covered up his bottle of whiskey, and left. 5 years later, 5 years later, he is speaking in San Diego, California, and a great big man comes up to him, throws his arms around him, and says, "Are you Scott?" And he says, "Yes." And he says, "You saved my life." Scott says, "I don't know you." And the guy says, "Oh, yeah, I forgot that part." He says, "Do you remember a number of years ago, you came to a motel in East LA and you talked to a guy that was falling asleep?" And he says, "Yeah, but that wasn't you." He said, "No, that guy died. About a month after you saw him, 2 months, he died. But I was hiding under the bed and I heard every word you said, and I haven't had a drink since." To the world, you're a person. To a person that is struggling, you can be the world. You can light them up and give them the one thing that the psychiatrist can't give them, the psychologist can't give them, the pay and way can't give them, the bariatric doctor can't give them, and that is hope. Hope that if you recovered from this vicious disease, this murderer of a disease, that maybe they can too. Show them how. Show them what you did. Stop doubting yourself. Stop thinking to yourself that sponsorship is for the chosen few. Stop looking at me and a couple of other people and saying, "They'll sponsor you. I can't." Because yes, you can. Yes, you can. You can do it. To the world, you're a person. And to that person, you can be the world. You can light them up. And a spark was struck in Akron, Ohio, in June of 1935. And that spark was struck and carried shaking hand to shaking hand, from fragile soul to fragile soul, until one day in 1955, it reached a man named Jim Willis. And Jim Willis was an alcoholic, but he was also a gambler. And he knew that gamblers needed a place to go where they could recover, that were not alcoholics, and he formed a group in Oxnard, California, called Gamblers Anonymous. In 1959, he appeared on a television show called The Paul Coates Show. And The Paul Coates Show was on in five cities in California, one of whom happened to be Los Angeles. And in November of 1959, one of the people that had just put her babies to bed that was watching The Paul Coates Show was Roseanne Scholar. Roseanne was a housewife. Her husband, Marv, had a friend who had a problem with gambling. And she decided, after watching this show with five gamblers whose voices were distorted and whose names were changed, to take this friend to a meeting in California of Gamblers Anonymous. At that meeting that occurred in November of 1959, Roseanne heard a beautiful description of her. Now, Jim Willis just happened to be at that meeting that night, and she walked up to Jim Willis and said, "Jim, my name is Roseanne, and I have a problem with food. Do you think your program would help somebody like me with an addiction to food?" And he heard the pain in her voice, and he turned to her and said, "You know, Roseanne, I don't see why not." And on January the 19th, 1960, in West Los Angeles, California, the very first meeting of Overeaters Anonymous was taking place. And to this day, in January, we celebrate the OA birthday in Los Angeles, California. And I hope that you can be there with us as we celebrate this coming year in Los Angeles, California. In a place called Luling, Texas, there was a guy by the name of A.G. Ainsworth. I can hear him. I can see him now. He's a big, tall Texan. And A.G. Ainsworth was coming home from an AA retreat. And they stopped off at a bakery, him and his friend Robert. And they stopped off at the bakery, and they were getting pastries. And A.G. didn't really want to eat the pastries. He'd had quite enough of binging and being fat. And he was in a lot of pain. And he said to his friend Robert, "Do you think a program like yours, AA, could help a person like me with their food?" And A.G. tried to make it sound like he was joking in case Robert made fun of him. But Robert heard the pain in his voice and said, "You know, A.G., I don't see why not." And there was a woman in Luling, Texas, and her name was Norma B. And Norma B. and A.G. Ainsworth founded a group in Luling, Texas called Gluttons Anonymous. And they formed Gluttons Anonymous, and they had five groups of Gluttons Anonymous. There were 16 groups of Overeaters Anonymous by 1961. A.G. Ainsworth called the AA office in New York and asked them if he knew if they knew of anybody using the big book and the steps around food. And they gave him Roseanne's phone number. And on a Sunday afternoon, they called Roseanne, and it was like Stanley finding Livingston. A.G. flew his private jet into Los Angeles, and he attended the very first, along with members of all five groups of Gluttons Anonymous, they attended the very first business meeting. And in a vote of 16-5, we became Overeaters Anonymous. And we have been Overeaters Anonymous since that time. A.G. became the first man in OA, not because he accomplished anything so great. It should have been me, but I'm kidding. But he was the first man in OA because the original charter of OA was it was for women only. No men were allowed. And the message has gone into 60, 70 countries by this time. And the message must be carried one person to the other, to the other, to the other. God had a job for Bill Wilson. God had a job for Dr. Bob and Ebby and Roland. And he had a job for me and he's got a job for you. Don't shirk your responsibility. Don't turn your back on God's work. This is the most wonderful work in the world.